Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello and welcome to our latest podcast. My name's Les Jones. I'm the creative director at Practice Plan. And I'm here for this podcast with my friend and joint speaker on our recent workshop tour, Mr. Simon Tucker.
Hello, Les. Nice to be with you.
Good to be with you too, Simon. I thought we'd spend some time looking at many of the principles that we covered on the Practice Plan workshop tour. Which I'm sure you'll remember was called the 10% push.
Absolutely.
A whole day working with practices to try and help them increase their income by 10% over the next 12 months. What do you think are the main challenges for a practice in terms of increasing their income?
Well, Les, you and I both spend a lot of time visiting practices, and they're always extremely busy. Mm. Yeah, there's lots going on, lots of regulation, obviously lots of patients around, quite nervous. And I think a lot of practices, if they just took a bit of time out to look at their business and said, what can we do as a team to increase our sales, rather than keep doing the same things over and over?
Yeah.
But actually just did a bit of brainstorming once in a while, threw some ideas around, and tried to find some quick wins that they can do straight away, they'd actually be amazed what's already in their own team and their own ideas. And I think the only reason they don't do it is because they're just too busy doing the same thing over and over. Being very professional, obviously, but actually then perhaps not looking at what could we do differently. Mm. And rather coming in every day and doing the same thing over and over and hoping for a different result, actually doing something slightly different once in a while and getting a different result. Mm. And I think we probably both saw that on the workshop where once you set the spark, and they're coming up with ideas, suddenly the ball starts to roll and they get quite excited about it. And obviously on the workshop tour, it's a bit easier because they've come out of practice for the day. Doing it in practice is a bit harder because you've got the day-to-day routine. But it's about making the time just to have, you know, half an hour, once a month or something, just to brainstorm some ideas.
So. It's quite surprising, isn't it, what the resulting uplift in profits is by increasing your income by 10%.
Absolutely.
Because it's not actually, it's not a straight correlation, is it, between your income and your profits on the bottom line?
No, no, absolutely. If you can increase the sales by 10% and you keep all of your normal costs the same, so obviously just by increasing sales by 10%, your staff costs are the same, your general overheads are the same. The only thing that goes up in relation to treatment is the materials you buy and the lab stuff. So overall, you get a huge increase in profit without changing very much. Mm. And I think the beauty of 10% is it's achievable. Yeah. You're not saying, well, let's double our sales or triple them even. You're saying, let's just, what happens if you, you know, went from 9 to 10 new patients a month, or you just increase your sales by 10% or your prices by 10%? Mm. I think the quickest win we saw on the workshop tour was people realizing that if they just suddenly went from £500 for something to 550. Mm-hmm. If you do the same number of those treatments over the next 12 months, you've actually grown your business by some 20-30%. Mm-hmm. It's your income. It's really powerful.
And I know that you feel quite strongly that dentists as a whole undervalue themselves.
Definitely. In my view, and I use this word very guardedly, dentistry is cheap. If you look at, let's take the average price for a crown in this country, a private crown is £500. In fact, on the NHS, it's £224 for the patient. Mm-hmm. Well, if that crown lasts 10 years, which it generally will, unless the patient does something crazy like take the top off of a bottle with their teeth, but they should last a minimum of 10 years, well, that crown's cost less than £50 a year.
Pound a week.
Yeah, a pound a week. Yeah, now, what can you buy, TV, washing machine, anything for £500 these days that you know will last more than 10 years? Mm-hmm. Or, dare I say, without fear of being shot, how much do most people spend on their hair every month or every 6 weeks? Mm-hmm. So, dentistry...
Not much in my case.
Or mine. But I know a certain member of my family who spends quite a lot and won't declare it. But actually, as I said, if you look at dentistry as a cost, it's very low for what you receive. And I think all the fear around price is in the mind of the team and the dentist. Mm. But actually, what they're delivering, when you think of the education they've gone through, the care they give you, and I said the product they deliver, mm. is going to last you. I've got crowns in my mouth, been there 20 years.
Yeah.
So that's 50 pence a week. Mm. You know, it's minimal.
Yeah.
So I don't think any dentist should be frightened about putting their prices up. Mm. And also everything they buy is going up on a regular basis. VA, you know, tax goes up. Mm. Just basic costs go up. Mm. So, yeah, putting a 10% stroke across all your lab-based items is the quickest win you can have in terms of increasing your business. So.
But that's a confidence thing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's having the real confidence and the belief that what you're delivering has that value. You and I both go into practices and we talk to dentists who start off saying one price to a particular patient. Before you know it, it's actually 30, 40% cheaper than what it started.
Yeah.
And so building that confidence and real belief that what you're delivering has that real value to a patient. Is
yeah, and it starts with the leader, the principal of the practice or the owner of the practice, having to believe that. And most dentists will remember there was a guy in London passed away now, Colin Hall Dexter, and he referred to it 30 years ago as neurofiscal drag.
Right.
Think 500, say 350.
Yes.
And it's common across all professions, but particularly in dentistry. So if the principal or the dentist can get comfortable saying the price, then that trickles down through the team. Mm. Because what you don't want is the patient going to the desk to pay and the receptionist said, oh, you're going to have one of those. Well, that's quite a lot of money, isn't it?
Yes.
You just can't have that because...
Yes.
If you walked into a shop and asked how much a pair of shoes was and the salesman says, oh, they're really quite expensive, they're £500, you think, oh, well, he thinks they're not good value for money.
Yeah.
Whereas if he says, oh, those are £500, Mr. Jones, would you like to try them on?
Mm.
With confidence,
mm-hmm.
but you're right, it's a confidence thing about what you're delivering is value for money, which is why I use that analogy of £500, £50 a year, pound a week for a crown.
Yeah,
I think... You have to accept that you are delivering incredible value for money as a practice.
Yeah.
Value is personal, so if the patient doesn't value the treatment, it will seem like an awful lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But if they value having their teeth looked after, which most of them do if they're going to the dentist, then £500 is actually not very much. So.
Thinking back to the workshop tour,
obviously
we had lots and lots of practices who came along.
Mm.
And I'm sure they sat there on at the beginning of the morning thinking that we were going to hit them with a whole range of new ideas that they could implement to raise their income by 10%. But of course, what we did is we kind of threw it straight back at them, didn't
Absolutely,
we?
Absolutely, yeah.
And we said, well, you know, for the next 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, you think about all the areas in which you could start to increase the income. That was quite a revelation, wasn't it?
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
As you said, firstly, people come to a workshop, expect to be given lots of information,
mm-hmm.
which is great,
mm-hmm.
but we know, you and I both know, that actually 99% of that information that's given out gets forgotten by the time they've left the room.
Yes.
So by turning it round on them, getting them to come up with ideas, firstly, ingrain the ideas in their heads a bit better, but also it showed what we were talking about earlier, that actually as a team, if you just spend 10, 15, 20 minutes once a month brainstorming, all the best ideas are already within your team.
Yeah.
And again, if we look at the dentist, the principal, the owner, generally is spending most of the day in a 3 meter by 3 meter room working with patients, whereas the rest of the staff actually are seeing how the practice is working and have always got ideas.
Yes.
Just by getting them to brainstorm it. I mean, we had them, you know, the post-it notes all down the wall.
Yeah, we did.
And there was a lot of commonality.
Yeah.
A lot of good ideas came out of there, and I learned something from
it. I think back to almost every event, there were probably 30, 40 different ideas that practices were coming up with for little areas within the practice where they could increase their income. Obviously, what we did then is we picked up on some of those things and tried to explore them a little bit. I know one of the big areas for you in terms of missed opportunity for income generation is around hygiene.
Yes.
And how practices are missing out on the opportunity of building that side of their business.
Yes. Yeah. I think, again, if we look at the industry, I've been in the dental industry 35 years now, and we're still referring to hygiene as a cleaning or a scale and polish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't really describe what it actually does.
No.
And most patients go to the dentist because they care about their mouth health.
Yes.
And the dentist knows and the hygienist knows and actually the staff know that the best way to keep your mouth healthy is to see the hygienist on a regular basis.
Mm.
And once that's explained to patients, they're very happy to pay for
it.
And actually, when you increase the amount of hygiene that's going through a practice, the income is great because actually the cost of hygiene is low, the revenue is high. And also, people have healthier mouths, they feel more comfortable, and they come back regularly. So it's a great way to grow your business, is to increase the hygiene throughput. So, and yeah. Now with direct access, hygienists can, you can advertise that service purely on its own. So
yeah, I also know one of your passions, particularly in your business, is helping dental teams to communicate more effectively.
Yes.
You and I both believe that there's a huge amount of work, potential work, that walks out of a dental practice every single day for the want of better communication.
Yes.
If I was to ask you to kind of, you know, pluck one or two nuggets from the air in terms of how people can improve their communication in their practice, what would you say to that?
Number one thing is, communication amongst the team is vital. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that, and I don't mean from a business perspective, I mean from a patient perspective, because I know very well, because I spent a lot of time observing patients moving through the practice and recording it. And patients lie to the dentist frequently, because it's just like when your doctor says, how many units of alcohol do you drink? We lie, because there's this white coat syndrome, this fear around what. So when a dentist says, have you understood me, or is that clear? The patient says, yes, I'll book that treatment.
Yes.
But then they go back out to the desk and they ask the receptionist 100 questions, or say, oh, I'm sorry, I haven't got my diary, I'll call you to book. Mm-hmm. So the dentist thinks they've booked the treatment, but actually they haven't. Now, patients then say different things to the nurse, different things to the hygienist, different things to the receptionist. Mm-hmm. So if that information is not shared in some way, they're missing out key information about that patient. I was with a practice up in the Northeast recently, and we discussed this particular topic, and all they've agreed to, what they agreed at the meeting, was to create a pop-up note of a specific color, is purely for those shared notes.
Right.
So that any little thing that's said by a patient, like Les says, mm-hmm. my son's going off for his music exam, or mm-hmm. Les has said something about a holiday, they make a note and they share it. So slowly, they all have the same information. So that's point one, share key patient information.
Yeah.
Point two is, engage the patient in more communication when they're in the chair. Mm-hmm. Most patients come into the dentist for their routine examination, hoping to hear, everything's fine, see you in 6 months. So as soon as the dentist says, you need a filling, the patient's ears close over, mm-hmm. and in their head they're thinking, do I need it? How much will it cost? Will it hurt? How long will it take? And the dentist is talking away, giving a wonderful description of what the treatment's going to be, and the patient's not listening. Mm. So I say to the dentist, just as soon as you find that problem, say, don't worry, Les, everything's fine, except a bit of a problem here, but we can fix it. Mm-hmm. However, I've got a couple of options for you. What would you like to know first? And now I've got you engaged in the conversation. Yeah. And suddenly we're talking about you from your perspective, not me from my perspective as a dentist. Mm. Just ask more questions.
Yeah. Oh, and a great way of asking those questions. So you showed a couple of videos on the workshop tour of a treatment coordinator using a dental health assessment form.
Yes.
Just explain how that works and what value it can deliver into a practice.
Well, again, I find asking questions really easy. Mm-hmm. But then I've been in sales for 35 years. Mm-hmm. Trying to get a dental team to ask more questions. Actually, it's hard for them because they're obviously very focused from a clinical perspective and they want to do everything professionally. So I've created, in fact, myself and a colleague of mine, Richard Collar, created a document a few years ago, which is just a prompt, mm-hmm. allows the patient to answer some very simple yes or no questions, and then is used either by a treatment coordinator, mm-hmm. preferably, or any other member of the team, mm-hmm. just to say, Les, I can see on the scale here, you've said you rate your teeth as a 9 or an 8 out of 10. What's the reason you've not put a 10? Mm-hmm. And just having that questionnaire has enabled me to personalize the question, mm-hmm. but it's helped prompt me. Because if you're seeing 5, 10, 15 patients a day, you need something to get that conversation started. So just using that little tool, and I think they can probably find that on the Practice Plan website, actually, can't
they? I think they can, yes.
So people want to download
it. Just to get in touch with us, and we can send them a copy of it.
But have a prompt, some sort of form just to prompt the conversations, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, you know, lots of great ideas there, Simon, in terms of, you know, areas that practices could look into to develop this additional 10% of income. What would be your advice on how they should commit to doing that? Because, you know, we deliver lots of talks, we do lots of workshops. We know deep down that there's a certain percentage of people who will really enjoy the day, and they'll be enthused and they'll be inspired and they'll go away and then nothing will happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how can practices just align themselves, you know, and focus themselves on committing to something and making it happen?
I think if they get together once a month, have a brainstorm, and I think it was your tip was make it quantity, not quality.
Yeah, lots of ideas.
Loads of post-it notes, lots of ideas. Don't try and develop the ideas, just really narrow them down. Just get them all out on paper, or have a board in the staff room, if you've got a staff room, and just keep sticking ideas up, and then make somebody the idea champion.
Right.
So somebody who's driving it forward, or just get a priority list, set objectives with those ideas, and then start to develop them. But somebody in the practice, I think, needs to be the idea champion.
Yeah.
And the big thing to do is take the quick wins first. So the things you can do really quickly, like putting your prices up, or starting with a document and start asking more questions. Take the quick wins, because as those wins go through, everybody gets a bit more confidence that this can work.
Yeah.
So, but I think somebody needs to take charge and say, right, I'm going to be the ideas champion. Once we've brainstormed it, I'll start driving some of them through. So just.
And what about kind of measuring results then? Because again, you'll need to see some kind of evidence, won't you, as to whether what you're implementing is actually having an impact on your practice.
Yeah. Everything they decide to do should have a measurement on it. So if you're going to grow by 10%, that's fine, but put a time period on it. If you're going to get, if one of your ideas is to get five more patients on, or more patients on plan, put a number on it. So is it five a month? Is it 10 a month? Is it 20 a month? Because if you say just put more patients on plan, well, one's a success.
Yeah.
But if you've got 100 and you're going to go to 110, well, 10's your measure. And when you reach it, you can pat yourself on the back and say, well, maybe we can go to 20 next.
Yeah.
So put a measure, either a time or a date or a value on those successes.
Yeah.
So you have to have a measure of some sort. You know, start a new website project, yes, but by when? And if you say May, May which year? So is it May 2017, May 2018?
Yeah.
And again, allocate somebody to do it.
Yeah.
You need an idea champion that then says, right, Les, you're going to do this one. Becky, you're going to do this one. Christine, you're going to do that one. Just give somebody the responsibility and a time limit to fit it on. So put measurements on it. So,
brilliant. Simon, as usual, lots of really relevant, practical hints and tips there that I'm sure if dental practices were to implement, they would start to see this 10% push within their practice. If people want to find out more about you or kind of get in contact with you, where do they go?
I've got a website, profitableconversation.com, or they can contact the practice plan team, I'm sure, who will pass them my details. So look me up. I'm sure you'll find me somewhere. So,
as always, a pleasure, Mr. Tucker.
Thank you very
look
much.
Look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to this practice plan podcast, and we'll catch you again.